How's it hanging, everybody? Welcome back to Tag Team, the Pokemon Trading Card Games Premier Podcasting Trio, temporarily a duo. My name is Riley Holbert, joined as always by my good friend, Mr. Andrew Mahone. Andrew, how's it going today?
Oh, we're big chilling. JW is not with us as he just had his second daughter, Casey, right? Very exciting. Excited for him. I found out about his second daughter the same way I found out about his first through Twitter. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Likes above all.
Oh, yeah. So very happy for him and Ann. But, you know, we'd probably be getting a lot of baby crying in the background, I guess, if he was to be joining us on the podcast these weeks. Not to mention, I suspect he's helping Ann out with the child care duties.
You would think. Maybe. Yeah. Before JW's not here to defend himself whatsoever. So
absolutely not.
Free reign to lay it on him.
That's what you get to do when your bud, you know, takes a couple weeks off, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, week one, you know, no need to lay it on. But second week, I mean, get serious, man. Get serious.
Oh, yeah, for sure. 2 weeks off the cast, bro?
I mean, this is America. Man. You cannot be taking 2 weeks off your job for something as trivial as a child.
Paternal leave, dude? Paternal leave? What do you think this is?
You didn't give birth to it. Get back in the office.
It is America. That's right.
So,
but obviously very excited for JW and Ann. Their family of four now. Very, very thrilled for them. And things are going really well on my end. Just got done doing a huge Twilight Masquerade stream with Jesse today. Viewership was awesome. People seemed really into the new decks. We had a lot of hype and interesting games that I'm thrilled to talk about now. And these are, like, you know, this is now the second kind of lengthy stream that I've had with Jesse, really diving into the new strategies and some of the new decks. And between the games that I've played and kind of exploring Japan's results, I feel like I've got, like, a pretty good early understanding of the format and the interactions between decks and things like that. So I'm stoked to talk about that. On a personal level, Natalie and I went to baby class last night, so that was fun. Yeah, we got to do a little baby class as we prep for our newborn, who is to be born sometime in September. So very excited about that. So that was fun. You know, I got to do a bunch of things, like learn how to change a diaper and, you know, how to care for a baby. You know, I never grew up with, like, baby siblings or anything like that. So this is all new info for me, and I'm excited.
Yeah, I had some really young siblings, relatively speaking, to me. So I caught some of that stuff. But even that, I feel like, you know, it's good to put in the effort to prepare, right? You know, I feel like I used to see it around the house when I was a kid, like one of those really common, like, parenting books that my parents had. And no shade on them. Like, I was the first kid. All respect to learning the craft. They did a good job. So
I always thought it was funny, you know, like, me being raised. I never got like, yelled at as a kid, right? I mean, like, my dad raised his voice at us sometimes, and my mom would get frustrated. I mean, my parents would get frustrated, but I never got, like, yelled at or screamed at, right? And it was like, I mean, both my parents have psychology degrees. And my dad is a neuropsychologist. And so it was, like, it's very funny getting, like, best practices in the home. Like, my dad was, like, a, you know, literally researched, like, children's development and, like, in neuroscience and all that, and specifically, like, childhood ADD and ADHD and stuff, but, like, has all that background and his PhD, and, like, to have that stuff, like, actually at the home, it's like, whoa, okay, like, that's crazy. In the 90s, you know, you guys are pretty ahead of the curve.
Yeah, you're on it for sure.
yeah. So I feel like I thankfully I got some good examples to go off of from my parents growing up, But yeah, no, I'm excited to be a dad for sure.
As you should be. Well, things are going okay here as well. You know, just started packing my very first boxes as we were getting ready for the move over here. The first four boxes were pretty much entirely Pokemon stuff, so that's embarrassing, but You know, here we are. I had one that was like just Old Worlds backpacks, which was really tough on the mental. But I'm feeling like we're starting to gear up for the move. It's getting more real. It's actually a month from today where we'll be moving, so it's really exciting.
Yeah, you and Jill are moving into your first apartment together.
That's right. That's right.
Yes.
And so if y'all remember, I canceled my trip to Orlando coming out of EUIC. I was feeling a little burnt out and didn't want to do a tournament back to back like that. I got around $700 in Delta flight credit, which I've now put forward to planning a trip actually to go to Ohio to see Andrew. So I'm really excited about
Let's
that.
freaking go.
Really like spur of the moment decision. Jill and I were just like on our phones, and I'm like, yeah, I might as well just like look at flights. I was like, you know what? Like, do we want to just book it? And we did, and it was awesome. So,
Yeah, we're thrilled to have you guys. We're so excited. It's going to be awesome to have you
I think
guys visit.
sometimes I stress Jill out because I'm like, just make decisions really quickly. And she's like,
Yeah,
no, I
well,
need to.
impromptu being serendipitous is that's fun.
Well, I remember like a couple weeks ago, I got these new shoes and they're sick and I love them. But I saw them on an Instagram ad. They're just some Nikes. And I just went to dsw.com and bought them. She's like, you didn't go through every page of the website and look at all the shoes? Like, no, I want these shoes. Those are the ones I want. So, yeah,
Natalie call Natalie and I call that being whimsical and fun. Like I, sometimes like one of us will be being whimsical and fun, you know, and we love to point out when one of us is being stressed and like the other it's like, oh well, you know, you don't seem like you're being very whimsical and fun right now. I am the pinnacle of whimsical and fun over
Yeah,
here,
whimsy
and
is
you are
key.
stressed about something that doesn't matter.
So, lots of cool stuff on the horizon here. It's going to be, I think, a long sort of couple weeks is we're like packing up all the apartments. The worst is when you're at like the dregs and you're just living in a mostly empty apartment that's full of boxes. But yeah,
Do you think
it's a
there
cool time.
becomes a point? Does there become a point when you have too much Pokemon stuff as you're kind of like packing the stuff up?
Yes.
And what is the point?
I don't know, but I feel like I've crossed it for card stuff specifically. Like too many play mats, too many deck boxes, too much bulk, like just a little too much of everything. I divorce the Pikachus that sit behind me from any of that. Like they're exempt from any discussions about like quantity of Pokemon merchandise. And actually, I would like many more.
All right, so then we're going to get into some real questions. How does Jill feel about the Pikachu shrine next to the bed? And is this something that will continue once you are living with your partner, Jill?
She's fine with the shrine. Got a nooch on the shrine, I would say. It is on her side of the bed, which I always used to joke that like they watch over whoever is like in that region. You know, they keep an eye out for you. But the plan is actually we're getting a two bedroom, and so one bedroom will be like the guest bed office space, and that's where the shrine will probably live. And then the other bedroom will be like the main master sleeping bedroom.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, so the Pikachu shrine's not gonna watch over you guys anymore.
No, but I mean, to me, like I like having the Pikachu shrine like behind me when I have like a webcam on or something. Even for work, like if I'm working from home, it's always like a great conversation starter. So, I think having it in like the gamer dungeon, which slash guest bedroom, is like the right move.
I agree with that. It is a nice now that I'm kind of thinking of it as this room is like not only your bedroom, but also your office, like that, it makes more sense, right?
Yeah, especially like during COVID when I was working from home every day with camera on, like infinite like icebreakers achieved by just having the Pikachu
Goodness, I'm sure. Well, we got a lot to talk about today, and I'm excited to kind of get to it. Riley, where do you want to steer this conversation first?
Yeah, so as we're looking at today, I think there's two things I really want to make sure we're hitting on. The first is taking a look kind of at our present. So we're still in the Temporal Forces format. And so I want to make sure we're talking through kind of what things are looking like on the ground today. We just had multiple Tier 2 events over the last weekend. Puerto Rico, Stockholm, and Bogota all having some interesting outcomes taking place there. But then I would love to steer towards Twilight Masquerade. So we have been talking about Twilight Masquerade now for many weeks. Andrew, you have started some of your preliminary testing and streaming. You alluded to that earlier. So I'd love to talk about how things are going, what the meta is looking like in Japan, how we expect things to evolve in the lead up to NAIC in the coming weeks, and what folks should be preparing for. So with that, let's just start from the top and talk about where we are right now before we look ahead towards Twilight Masquerade, which I'm sure many of our listeners are really excited for. Two of the three regional / special events this weekend were won by Snorlax. I was kind of surprised by that, to be honest. I felt like Snorlax had fallen off a little bit and that Pidgeot was like the agreed upon stall deck to play. But man, like Azul dominated. I don't know if you watched the stream at all, but Azul completely dominated through like the top eight. It was not close. And I don't know how things went in Bogota, but you know, Snorlax beat Giratina in the finals. You know, like that's crazy, right? So, Andrew, what are your thoughts on Snorlax as a deck coming both out of these events and in general, right? Like, is Snorlax something that could maybe be viable, for example, in Twilight Masquerade?
A lot of people, there's been a lot of discussion about these results, right? And specifically, like, is Snorlax overpowered, all that? No. Okay, we're at the tail end of this format before Twilight Masquerade comes out. And to me, it's hilarious because even though we're at the tail end of the format, I think we're actually at the beginning of the format with Snorlax winning. And why I say that is because Snorlax was immediately making a huge impact in Japan at the beginning of this format. If you remember looking back at the Japanese results, Snorlax was all over the place. So the international community kind of pre-prepared for the stall matchups in the form of kind of towards EUIC winning Charizard deck, which played two Turo Scenario and a Yell's Cheer. You don't just play all that, right? Unless like you are going to dominate the control matchup. Like,
yes, agreed.
So towards list kind of came pre-packaged with that. And as the meta develops, like, if everybody's playing towards list, you can't just play control if everybody's got two Turo and a Yell's Cheer in their deck. So for at least a few weeks, control was like kind of off the menu as people were just net decking Tord and kind of playing a very similar copycat list, right? So Tord had to kind of, not Tord, control kind of had to go under the radar for a few weeks and wait for the hate to die down, right? And now that people are kind of not teching for control because control kind of went undercover for a while, now it's rearing back. And it's hilarious because Baxcalibur has a terrible quad Snorlax matchup, as you know, because you played Baxcalibur at EUIC and hit some. So yeah. Indy was kind of like the perfect regional for Baxcalibur because it was kind of like right there, like the last major event where control was like really not getting any hype or notoriety. Azul's group notably still did bring control, but they played a version of control that Baxcalibur has a fine time against. I was able to 2-0 Ryan Antonucci, who I think is playing the same list as Azul's group.
Yeah.
I was able to 2-0 him in day two playing Baxcalibur. I would not have had that luck had they been on the deck they played the following weekend in Stockholm. The quad Snorlax, like, that would have gotten absolutely destroyed. So, you know, Indy was kind of like the last great event for Baxcalibur as Snorlax was still not super hype and we didn't really have to deal with that matchup at all. But at that point, you know, people were kind of cutting all their techs and all the respect for the control matchup. So, of course, Azul, you know, Azul's group, Caleb, Grant, Ryan Antonucci, Azul, I don't know if Grant went to Stockholm, but
I think it was Ryan and Azul were the ones.
I think just Ryan and Azul. Yeah. But they finished first and ninth, right? So like they did well, but they kind of had the they had the previous weekend under their belt already, where they're kind of like already had been playing Control through the last regional and were obviously like kind of familiar with what they had to do to beat the decks that were popular, right? Yeah. So they kind of had already mapped out what Control needs to win. And so then since Grant didn't win, right? Grant got top four, Grant didn't win. So like the deck was still under the radar, Control still under the radar for another week. And then of course Azul was able to win. And then we've got another Snorlax deck winning the special event in Bogota as well. And now everybody's up in arms like, oh, Snorlax is broken. It's been broken the whole time. It's just that you were teching for it before and beating it, and now we're not teching for it and you're losing to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I am glad that you went about it that way, because I like totally agree, at least with the generic thought process, that the format has sort of centered itself around not having Snorlax in the format, if that makes sense. And so all the respect has gone out the window over the weeks. You know, you had EYC toward playing with the multiple Turos and the Elscheer. Okay. Then immediately after that, you have Orlando, where Liam runs the same 60, which is so awesome. And I still love that.
And freaking wins. Literally changed one card, wins. Yep.
And it's like an inconsequential card, too. It's like a Charmeleon for the Jirachi or something.
For the Jirachi, yep.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, you look at the Charizard lists, and they're playing like one Turo and a Palpad, if that. You know, they might not even be playing that. So, like, you know, the Charizard lists have kind of lost their respect for Control. You have Bexcalibur as a bigger factor, and they struggle against those Snorlax decks quite heavily. And, you know, all of a sudden you have this, like, perfect storm where Snorlax can come in where previously it was hated out of the game. I do personally think of Snorlax and Pidgeot as playing maybe a little more substantially different than you do, in at least in the context of how you're referring, like Azul and them, like playing them back to back. It almost feels like they played very different decks, but just realized that there was a gap in the format where like Control could pull through. You know, you look at a Sanders top 16 Pidgeot deck, it is not at all the same strategy as like what Azul was doing. With the Snorlax.
Yeah, Liepards?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. There's Liepards in there.
Yeah. I mean, it's classic Sander list. You know, there's like,
yeah,
there's the draw two guy. You know, that's a Sander special. You got the Pidgey DX, makes sense. And just, you know, a bunch of one ofs. You got Picnic Basket, of course. Can't forget the Picnic Basket.
Of course. Sander just ahead of the game. People are going to be thinking about Picnic Basket with Dragapult out there, but like, you know, sheesh.
Yeah, he was playing it for like the Drifloon, I think.
Right, to get it stuck. That was it. Yeah, yeah, to stick the oh my gosh.
It's awesome. Yeah, so Azul ultimately pulling through with the Snorlax stall. You know, his games again were very dominant. I don't think the deck itself is broken. I think you can choose to respect the deck or not. And yeah, there's going to be some matchups that are just blowouts for the Snorlax deck. At the same time, there's plenty of decks that can hang plenty fine against it. So I don't really see it as being like a problematic force in the metagame. And I do agree at sort of these tail end formats is when Control is at its best, because you know the best what to expect. I feel like in some ways Control is weaker at the start of the format, despite the fact that lists are less refined, because you have no idea like what people are actually going to be rolling up with. You can only predict it.
Yes, and now you have an idea like, all right, people are playing Bexcalibur within these 58 cards. People are playing Charizard within these 58 cards.
Like, and it's going to be like this percent of the meta. And yeah, like you can safely make those assumptions in ways that you can't at a tournament like UIC or NAIC 100%. Coming up. So totally agree. Also, Jose Marrero with Goldengus.
Dude, I said Golden Go was going to top 8 LAIC. All right, that was a long time ago. We didn't get top 8 at LAIC, but Golden Go winning the Puerto Rico special event. Let's freaking go.
That's like the same amount of CP, so
Yeah, so I'm really excited for Jose getting that win. I sat near Jose in Indy. He started off real strong with his same Golden Go deck. I mean, he's just rocking the Golden Go deck. And he made day two. I mean, he finished in like the top 256 or something, you know, kind of middle of the pack day two. But then, you know, to go to the Puerto Rico special event, win it, that's pretty sick. Golden Go believers, you got a little something to hang on to there. You got a little boost for the Golden Go believers. That's big. That is big.
And I know they're out there too.
They are, for sure.
And they're powerful. So, all that being said, we're about a week away from two things. We're a week away from Twilight Masquerade dropping, but we're also a week away from the Los Angeles Regional Championship. If there is a listener out there who is going to Los Angeles, Andrew, what would you recommend that they bring with them?
Two Turo scenario and he yells cheer. you should, I've been saying it like every cast. I mean, this is just a format where you should play the deck that you are most comfortable with, right? Unless you're someone who has five different decks that you seriously know front and back, then like, that don't play a deck that loses to Snorlax this week, right? But like, also you want to stay one step ahead of the metagame, right? So it's like, you don't want to be like overly reactionary to Snorlax, right? Because then are people who are trying to stay one step ahead just going to play exactly what they played last week, especially when it's a meta call deck like Snorlax? Like, Snorlax is a kind of deck that strikes when the moment's right, and then it's got to lay low again, right? You don't strike twice, I think. You don't just run quad lax again. You're kind of asking for it if you do, right? Because you revealed your hand. You said, we played the quad lax deck. We won a regional with it. You know, are people really going to say, like, oh, yeah, let's... No. There's going to be so many people that are trying to tech for the quad lax matchup. Nobody likes losing to stall. Nobody, okay? People hate it. They hate it more than anything. So my word of advice would be change nothing. Let everybody else tech for the stall matchup and just play whatever your heart tells you to play, whether it's Golden Go or Baxcalibur or that Charizard deck, Lugia,
that Giratina. Charizard deck.
Yeah. Listen.
Whatever that thing is.
Whatever. I don't know. Is there a deck you wouldn't recommend for
Ancient
LA,
Box.
Riley? Ancient, I cannot in good conscience recommend Ancient Box. Notice how that was not on my list.
Yeah.
I mentioned Golden Go. I did not mention Ancient Box.
just to be clear, not Ancient Box. But anything else probably is fine. Maybe not Future Box either. Just stay in the present day.
Present day. No Ancient, no Future. Yeah. Speaking of the Ancient and Future, I mean, those mechanics I feel like are kind of phasing out, right?
I guess so. Yeah, they're like shifting gears already, which is a pretty weak showing from the mechanic, to be honest. Yeah, I felt like they at least kept up the Ultra Beast for like the entirety of the remainder of
Sun and Moon.
Like, even if they didn't print new support, there'd be new cards tagged with it.
Like, there are a couple new Future and Ancient guys. Like, we got the Iron Leaves single prizer.
Kinda, that's true.
You know, thinking about that. But, like, funny enough, even though there aren't some great Ancient and Future cards being printed in Twilight Masquerade, there is the Teal Mask Ogre Pawn EX, which people are playing with the long neck guy, Raging Bolt, right?
Great.
So people are playing that with Raging Bolt. So it's like Raging Bolt's kind of getting a nice little buff, even though it has nothing to do with being an Ancient Pokemon. Yeah.
I mean, they are still printing cards, I guess. So they could maybe revisit it in the future if they want. To be honest, I kind of wish they did more with the Paradox Pokemon, just given how much of a focus they were in like the games themselves. But It's fine. I mean, I don't think they need a B-string. Or chill.
No, man. I don't think you need to give ancient Pokemon a B-string. Like, we're good. Yeah. That's totally fine. So for LA, that's the last major event in this current standard format. We had Dialga V-Star. I mean, win Indy, obviously. Do you think that was a fluke, Riley? Or do you think Dialga V-Star is going to kind of be around for the long haul now?
Maybe a little bit of both. I mean, I don't think it's like a tier one deck. It's, you know, like a tier two deck probably. And that's fine. You know, there's a Dialga in like the top 32 or something in Stockholm, but that was it. I think it's just fine. You know, it's a fine deck. It has fine matchups. I don't know if I would like particularly leap to play it, excuse me, over anything else in particular, but it's fine. You know, if you like the deck, go for it for sure. I'd rather play the Nation Box.
Amen, brother. Yeah. If you like love the Dialga deck, I think that Dialga is super solid. And it's funny watching how the deck just kind of glowed up and now it's here. And it's exactly like JW was asking me, like, before EUIC. He's like, why would you consider playing this deck? It's not real, you know? And I'm like, no, there's something there, bro. There's something there. I swear there's something there.
Yeah.
There's something there, bro. It's so broken when it works. It's so broken. So, yeah, it's funny to kind of see it. And it's like, you know, a month ago we were laughing about it. Now it's like a serious. You're not, you know, trolling by saying I'm gonna play Dialga. You're not trolling. It's very similar thing to what we saw with Maridon kind of earlier.
Yeah, I think what Dialga like is really missing to like truly solidify itself is like a tier one kind of deck in my mind is just like it lacks good single prize options. So you're like very pigeonholed into like attacking with these big Dialgas. And a lot of matchups that's fine, but there's matchups where you just really wish you weren't doing that all the time. So I think that's like kind of the one fatal flaw the deck has. Otherwise it runs fine. Like it flows pretty well. And I like that you can build up knowledge of your deck with Matang and like play around that thoughtfully. You can do some really cool things when you get to like the bottom of your deck, you know, playing around Iono and stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's a cool deck for sure. I don't think it's tier one. It doesn't need to be to win an event, to be sure. And it doesn't need to be Charizard level broken to be an acceptable deck.
Yeah, tier two decks win tournaments all the time. Mm-hmm. Like Quad Snorlax.
Yeah, I mean, look, Arceus is like topping events. If Arceus can top events, Dialga can win events. Straight up. Like
straight up. Yeah. I mean, my goodness. Arceus, man. How is this deck still around, bro?
And it looks the same.
How is this deck still around?
It's just the same deck. We've been playing this for years.
We saw some conversation, just kind of final thoughts on Azul's control win. It's his seventh regional win, by the way. He is now tied with Michael Pramawat for, I think, being one of the most regional winningest players in the world. I think Michael Pramawat was previously seven. Was the only one on that hill at seven. Now Azul is also at seven. So that's pretty exciting if you like following kind of those Pokemon lore feats, things like that. But there was some discussion about the power of Airy, right? And whether or not Airy is a card that ought to be banned, or is it too powerful? Did the game designers make a mistake with Airy? Riley, why don't you kind of give us your thoughts on Airy as a card? I mean, we obviously knew coming into this set that Airy was just an extremely strong card, but it honestly didn't outright win a major until just now with like Stockholm and what Azul was able to accomplish.
I mean, Airy is obviously a powerful card, but Sora is every supporter in the game that isn't like a joke supporter. You know, like every seriously played supporter is insanely strong. Professor's research is insanely strong. Like, let's be real. Professor Seda is insanely strong. Boss's orders is extremely strong. And, you know, I think Eri is about the appropriate power level for a supporter card. You know, there's opportunity cost to playing it. You know, you're not drawing more cards. You're not, like, building up your board state independently when you play Eri. Like, you're just kind of doing that, and that's your turn. And so I think in that way, like, it's totally fine. And I think if anything, it's item cards that are broken and not Eri. You know,
that's facts.
You think about, like, when you think about, like, the 06 tournament you played the other week, right? And, like, the tempo of the game was completely different, and a lot of it was based on the relative power level of item and supporter cards. And to be honest, like, I don't mind if items are less of a focus anyway. I don't think that's the consequence of Eri. I think Eri is more like a symptom of items being a problem rather than Eri being a problem.
I think that's a really insightful kind of commentary on Eri as a card and how the game's developed over these years. Decks are so hyper fast, consistent, hyper consistent, you know. Games these days last four turns, right? And that's it. In 06, games lasted easily twice that long or three times that long. And, you know, I'm kind of thinking back to the 06 event. If someone played the equivalent of Eri against me in the 06 event, that would have done almost nothing. Yeah. Like, it does not matter. If you play a card that can discard my item equivalents, like, that doesn't matter. I only play a handful, and they're really not that meaningful. So it's pretty wild to think about right now. Entire engines are item built. I mean, look at a card like Pokestop. How ridiculous is that, right? And Pokestop is really a testament to how item focused many decks are. So Eri, I mean, maybe Eri is kind of a response the game designers to say, all right, we're going to start to take things back in a more supporter driven direction, and Eri is going to be one of the cards that helps us to do that by punishing players for playing decks that are too hyper hyper aggressive or hyper item focused. And they've done things like this in the past. I mean, not with card maybe as brutal as Eri, but there was Getsis before, which was kind of a similar item, you know, removal card that would shuffle them back into the deck. They've had cards like Rocket Sneak Attack and things like that to just remove cards from the hand. But even just item lock, like Vileplume cards and things like that, like locking items, also very similarly punish item-based decks. They don't remove the cards from the hand, but they make them so you can't play them. So, like, that's just as punishing for item-based. If you've got a handful of items, and I can evolve a card into play that says you don't get to play any of those, and you just sit there doing nothing, right?
Yeah.
So, to me, Eri is like, all right, someone plays Eri. What if they just went, where can you Vileplume? No more items for you. What's your freaking Baxcalibur deck doing against that? Nothing. So, you know, they could easily decide to print Vileplume tomorrow, and then what are you going to do about that?
Yeah, I mean, I also just don't think, like, Eri is not having the level of impact to where it could be a broken card in my mind. Like, Snorlax is not winning enough events at this point for me to even consider that. And you're not seeing Eri seriously be played in other archetypes besides, like, maybe these, like, goofy Arceus decks, which are fake anyway. So, like, you know, to what end is Eri broken? It's just that you don't like losing to Snorlax and it feels bad, which is fair. Like, it doesn't feel good, but, you know, you're at the end of the day, losing doesn't really feel good if you lost to Eri versus if a Charizard hit you for 300 damage. Like, it's the same difference. You still lost. Like,
for sure. Yeah, losing never feels good, right? I agree with that. So, but you know what does feel good, Riley?
Tell me, Andrew.
Shaving my pubes with some nice Manscaped products. Manscaped is the sponsor of today's cast, and tell you what, they've got some amazing men's grooming products to fit all of your grooming needs, be it deodorant or the nose hair trimmer, the weed whacker, or my personal favorite, the lawnmower 5.0, boxer briefs, all that. Manscaped has got you covered. Riley, where can our lovely listeners go to get the best men's grooming products.
Absolutely. Yeah, Manscaped, like Andrew said, is the premier men's grooming care brand. And if any of what Andrew said sounds interesting to you, you can head on over to manscaped.com. If you use code TAGTEAM at checkout, you'll get not only 20% off, but free shipping. And folks, it's spring, and I know you want your cherubis to shine. And guess what? Manscaped's got you covered. So if you want to collect some shiny cherubis, head over to manscaped.com, use code TAGTEAM at checkout, and get 20% off plus free shipping. Thank you so much to Manscaped for your continued support of the cast, and thanks to our listeners for checking them out.
Excellent. Now, it's time to move to the future. I think we've kind of established where we're at with the metagame and current standard. How are things going to shift? What new decks are catching our eyes? And what are we looking at as we kind of barrel forth towards the North American International Championships? I got a lot to say, Riley, so let me know. Do you kind of have any questions or any kind of thoughts to get us started on this front?
Yeah, I mean, some initial things I'll lay out there up front. For those of you who didn't see it, Tuan shared a matchup chart from the Sapporo Champions League from a couple weeks ago. We alluded to the Champions League in one of our casts as well, with Maridon winning the event in a surprise finish. And honestly, like, though you look at the chart, and Maridon has some really solid matchups in the field right now. It's crazy. You know, taking that massive Lugia dub, taking the Dragapult dub, taking the Gardevoir dub, the, like, Lost Blissey Box dub, the Blissey dub. Like, Maridon looking crazy for sure. And I think what I'm really curious about is Dragapult has been the center of the conversation for many weeks now. People are talking about how it's going to be the new TRS deck, how it's going to kind of usurp Charizard's role in the current format, and Dragapult's going to be the new Charizard in the future format. And I've always been skeptical of it. I think Dragapult's good. I don't think it's that excellent that it chokeholds the format. And I'm really curious, like, now that you have some of that on the ground perspective, what your thoughts are leading into Dragapult.
Yeah, I mean, Jesse and I have played like a lot of tabletop at this point. I mean, like a healthy amount of tabletop, and Dragapult just got its first best of three win at the tail end of our 7-hour stream after having played it against a bunch of other decks. It lost to Lugia. I mean, it lost to Maridon. And it lost to the Blissey deck. Okay, those three decks are not great matchups for Dragapult. I mean, but this is kind of the metagame that we're inheriting from Japan, right? Like, we're inheriting a metagame from Japan where Dragapult dominated for the first 2 weeks in Japan. But then players found out how to beat it. And then we're getting those lists from Japan. And then those lists are going to be the lists that people are already playing. So people have kind of already figured out that Dragapult's very good if you don't account for it. But if you do account for it, does Dragapult hold up to scrutiny? And finally, Dragapult was able to beat Dialga V-Star. We played against Dialga V-Star. We finally won the best of three, but not after lost to Lugia, lost to Blissey, and lost to Maridon. And it's like, those don't feel like great decks to lose to. You're like, what the heck? This is just Maridon. You're telling me I can't beat a Maridon deck? You know, like, Maridon fell off the face of the earth because it was losing to Charizard too much, and now your new king can't even beat Maridon? So, like, those are the kinds of feelings that I'm having about Dragapult right now. And my kind of take on Dragapult is that the card is strong, but I don't think that Dragapult necessarily holds up to scrutiny in the way that Charizard does. And I think that Charizard is just a far superior card, and that Charizard is a card that will eventually continue to outpace Dragapult. And something that, even though if you look at Tuan's results, man, Charizard's got some abysmal looking numbers there on the matchup chart. I don't think Charizard has a single positive matchup on Tuan's matchup chart. So that looks bad. I'm gonna put that out there. That looks pretty terrible. So maybe I'm wrong on that. But the feeling you get, okay, let's talk about the feeling you get from playing a deck like Charizard. You know when you're playing against Charizard and you get the feeling like, dang, they always have it, right? Or you're playing against like Chen Pao and you're like, dang, they just always have it. Dragapult does not instill that kind of confidence. In fact, Dragapult decks do not always have it at all, okay? Yeah. And there's a major reason for that. And the major reason for that is because all a Charizard deck needed to respond was like an Arvin. And they go, rare Candy Forest Seal Stone, Charizard, accelerate the energy in play, bam, right? Or whatever. They could go get the Defiance Belt. They could play the Countercatcher. The fact that Charizard is the attacker who also accelerates the energy, that does so much for the consistency of that deck. And then you can play Pidgeot with it, right? And then you have this deck that just always has what it needs. And it feels like it always has what it needs to respond to any situation. That's the Charizard Pidgeot like package. That's what that deck offers. And now Dragapult is in a situation where it's kind of like soul searching. It's looking for, you know, how are we going to make the deck? You can't just play, maybe this won't age well, but I don't think you can just play Dragapult and Pidgeot and Charizard. That just seems so convoluted and messy, and I don't really see the benefit of that. I don't necessarily hate Dragapult and Charizard being played together, because like the one thing that Dragapult desperately misses sometimes is just being able to do 300 damage, being able to just Iono and clear things. Dragapult wishes it could do that, but it just can't. And Dragapult, the whole plan kind of falls apart if your opponent like collapses something with a lot of damage on it that you were like, I was working on that, right? And then they like collapse it away, or they like Turo it up, or you know, any shenanigans like that. And Dragapult is just fuming because the whole game plan was like hinging on that thing staying there with the damage on it so that I could take my four prize turn and win. But so what I'm saying is Dragapult is an easier deck to pick apart than Charizard is. Charizard has way more consistency options and more often is able to ask difficult questions that the opponent doesn't have a great response to necessarily. So that's kind of my feelings on Dragapult. I'm not sure it'll hold up to scrutiny.
Yeah. No, I hear you, and I think there's a lot to be discovered with Dragapult for sure. Like, people are trying all these different ways to play it. So like you said, they're soul searching, and I think, you know, come the end of NAIC, I think the soul will have been discovered most likely, and we'll have a better picture of like, okay, this is kind of the premier way to play Dragapult. This is the way that Dragapult top four at NAIC, and like, this is what we're going to play it going forward. But I think right now it's like very much in a state of flux. And I just don't see it occupying that same kind of like chokehold that Charizard had over our current format. I could see it being super good, especially against the decks that evolve. But, you know, Dragapult's biggest fear is like a gigantic basic. and there's plenty of those that exist, you know, Rhydon maybe being the most premier version of that. But like, those strategies are out there, and that's exactly what Dragapult doesn't want to see. So one thing I had also penned on, I was looking more at Tuan's matchup chart. It's notable that the win rates don't add up to 100% because ties are like double game losses in Japan. And so Charizard does have a couple of, you know, favorable matchups where maybe it like got some ties that prevented it from creeping over 50%. So like Lost Box and Maridon, for example, are still favored for Charizard. So it's maybe not quite as bleak as it would seem at first glance. But also Charizard was like super underrepresented, if I'm remembering right.
For sure.
So just things to consider when we're like considering Charizard for the future. You know, I think the Charizard core is just so good. I could totally see it still showing up and smashing through a metagame.
I think so. I really do think so. I mean, being able to do 330 damage at the end of the game is absolutely ridiculous. And you're telling me that, like, after playing Dragapult, I've been playing the Zatu version, okay? I'll preface this with that. I've been playing the 2-2 Zatu. I've been kind of taking what I consider to be the best, most consistent pieces from a lot of the Dragapult Zatu lists that I've been seeing. After playing a whole bunch of games with Dragapult, I think that my favorite A-spec for it right now is the Unfair Stamp. It just feels like Unfair Stamp gives you the most opportunity to potentially buy an extra turn against decks, and that extra turn is kind of like what you need in order to win. It gives you one more turn to keep a Dragapult alive. It gives you one more turn to spread some damage on the board, right? One more turn to maybe use Radiant Alakazam to move damage counters into the perfect spot. So I really love it for that. I'm not as impressed with a card like Scoop Up Cyclone, as that depends on your opponent, like, not, you know, knocking out your Dragapult. And it seems to me like there are quite a few decks that can just knock out the Dragapult. So I don't really love leaning into that. I'd rather try to buy a turn by sticking your opponent to two cards in, like, the beginning to middle of the game and just saying, like, yeah, you're screwed, okay? Two cards, like, goodness. You still got a fat deck over there. You probably aren't going to see anything. And not to mention it's a draw card for you, which is also very good, especially if you're trying to have, like, an explosive kind of come-from-behind turn, countercatcher, Unfair Stamp. That kind of that can make some real magic happen when you're playing the Dragapult deck. So I definitely am liking the Unfair Stamp. But the Zatu version, it feels like it's a miracle if you get a turn to attack with Dragapult. That's like a small miracle if you're able to put all that together, right? That was not the case with Charizard. I mean, Charizard, like, the turn to attack, like, very easy to come by, right? All you need are two cards, Rare Candy and Charizard, and it's happening, right? But, like, to get the turn to attack with Dragapult, you have to find one of those stupid little boards, okay, which a lot of the lists are only playing one, so you got to find one of the boards, because then, you know, if you prize the board, you're not attacking till, like, forever, because you're going to have to retreat the active because there's no switch being played. But, I mean, Charizard, how often does Charizard just accelerate an energy to the active to retreat it? Like, that, those little things make such a difference with the consistency of your deck. Dragapult has to find the stupid little rescue board to retreat the active. God forbid it's a Radiant Alakazam, or else that just going to stay there pretty much forever until like then you have to pay to retreat it with the rescue board on, which is a nightmare. And then and it just doesn't feel like it's able to kind of get going fast enough, consistently enough. You know, so maybe there's some, you know, combination of Charizard and Dragapult, but I feel like why can't decks just play like a couple healing cards or something like that, and then Dragapult's just not a problem. I'm worried that, like, that people could play around or just play their big basic decks, right? And Dragapult has a terrible time against that. I was playing against Blissey. I've never felt so hopeless playing a deck than playing Dragapult into this freaking Blissey deck, dude.
You came on really strong with that one, and I liked that. Yeah, I mean, the matchup numbers Twan posted agree with you. It's not looking good if you're queued up with Dragapult into a Blissey. You're looking doomed.
Jesse embarrassed me on stream today. He's like, yeah, dude, I got this Blissey deck. I'm like, sure, I'll play Dragapult against it. That'll be fun. It's not fun, bro.
That's like Blissey's one thing that it's really going for. It's just ruining the lives of a Dragapult player.
It was horrible. Just, and to talk about the Blissey deck a little bit, because it is interesting. The Blissey deck really surprised me. It does absolutely decimate Dragapult. Dragapult has no hope. If there's not a Charizard in there to do 300 damage at the end of the game, Dragapult is hopeless. And this is why. It's because you do 200 damage to the active or whatever, and then you have to spread 6 damage counters to the bench. That deck plays like 3 Monkey Dory, and all they have to do is, like, switch one energy between a couple Monkey Dory, and they can move 9 damage counters. I had a Blissey deck one hit KO a Dracloak on my bench with Monkey Dory only, like, on turn 2. It was like turn 2, knock out, like, both your Monkey Dory And then knock out your Dracloak on the bench. It was turn two or three. I don't know. Yeah, turn three. Knock out your Dracloak on the bench. Swing into the active, right? But then that was my only Dracloak, dude. So then I got a damage shark. It was horrible. It's absolutely that's horrible. Really funny. They just heal. They heal so much damage, and then you do 200 damage, and then they fill their hand with their attack, and then they Sharon's Care, and they're picking up the thing, and they're putting it back down, and they're healing with the Monkey Dory. It was disastrous. Just to say the least, absolutely disastrous.
That's so awesome.
300 hit points. You're never knocking it out.
No. That's such a cursed amount for Dragapult to deal with. On a basic, especially.
So, horrible, dude. Horrible. And then if you try to like be cute with the damage counters, they're just going to use Monkey Dory to put them on you.
I also love Monkey Dory. It's such a good name.
But then, so you know, the Blissey deck, the kind of key component of the Blissey deck is that it is banking on you not being able to do 300 damage. That is like the...
Yeah.
That is what it wants, right? It's kind of like the Arceus decks. Arceus decks are like, you're not going to do 280, and sometimes they're right.
That's true. Yeah, it is kind of like the Arceus decks in a way. It doesn't have the auto acceleration, but it has some other cool things going for it instead. So, you know, you could, I guess, instead of the acceleration, you can happy switch the energy around is like the idea. So,
yeah, you go like turn one TM turbo energize, you get a couple energy in play, and then you start happy switching, bro. And that's that's it. That's the whole deck. Oh,
that's so funny.
Turbo energize feels exactly like. Whatever the first attack on Arceus V is.
Yeah.
Trinity Charge. Yeah, it feels exactly like that. Yup, and then you just get to swing in with Blissey. And you don't even need the... Since the Blissey's return attack draws to six, you don't even need a Beaverell, man. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. So funny. So, one deck that I'm really intrigued by, that the community at large is really intrigued by in the last week or so, I'm curious if you've had any experience with this, is the Teal Mask Ogre Pawn paired with Raging Neck. So, I mean, I'm looking at the lists that people are posting for this stuff. I do not really get it, besides the fact that Raging Neck is really good at KOing Dragapult specifically. Have you tried this at all in the new meta?
I have not tried it, but I have played against Jesse playing it. And
okay.
It's cool. I think it is definitely like the apex form of Raging Bolt. This is Raging Bolt at the best it can possibly be, is with this thing, right? It feels like this card was made to be with Raging Bolt, hilariously, though, because it takes a different color energy that Raging Bolt does not play well with.
This card does not feel like it was made for Raging
Bolt. No, but watching... You haven't played against it, bro. No, watching this deck work, you're like, dang, that's the vision right there. All right. This is it. It's crazy. Now, like, watching the two cards, because Teal Mask Ogre Pawn is not being played with anything else. It feels like those two cards, those are the ones. They belong together, okay? Teal Mask Ogre Pawn puts the energy into play.
Yeah, the Island of Misfit Toys.
It is the Island of Misfit Toys. Yes, 100%. But people like Raging Bolt. I think that's like one of the things that draws a lot of people to this deck, is they just want like a big guy who goes boom. And as you've seen from just looking at the results, like Roaring Moon is not really showing up in our Twilight Masquerade format. And I maintain that I think Roaring Moon is mostly fraudulent in our current format as well. I was not a big believer in that. JW wasted a regional playing the Moon Dunsparce deck. I would have never done that. Yeah. No. I'll waste an EUIC on Dialga V-Star, which ended up winning a regional. Thank you very much. But...
Pushes up glasses.
No, I still never played Moon to a major. Still. I'm somewhat of a Moon hater. But I think that Raging Bolt kind of satisfies this like big, ancient, basic, who goes boom... archetype better than Roaring Moon does, if that's the kind of deck that you want to play. If you want to play this giant basic deck that just like blasts things for one hit KO damage, that is the Raging Bolt Ogre Pawn deck. It kind of is like a reincarnation of the Roaring Moon deck Roaring Moon's kind of phased out. You got Dragapult to deal with now. Roaring Moon doesn't like that. Having to self-damage to do 300 damage. Not cool, man. So, like, you know, Roaring Moon kind of falling by the wayside there. Also losing the Galarian Moltres B was just a huge hit for the deck with rotation, generally speaking. So, yeah, I think the Raging Bolt deck is neat. I do think it's a little bit one-dimensional. It definitely suffers from having no single prize attacking option. But as far as like being a big guy who does a lot of damage and can definitely slay Dragapults, it checks those boxes.
Yeah, I think I agree with all of that. You know, it's acceptable. You know, the cards do synergize. Like, they synergize in the fact that they're basic Pokemon who get energy into play and they draw you cards. So I get it. Like, I get how they all kind of fit together in this puzzle. It's still, to me, like, you know, you look at these lists and they're like laid out and you're like, okay, like, what do we do? You know, and it could function fine, but you're looking at that list and like, this is not a list that like is gonna win a region. You know, that's how I feel when I look at them. And I'd be happy to be proven wrong, you know, that'd be sick. But yeah, I don't know, it seems one-dimensional. I feel like you're playing this deck specifically to beat Charizard and to beat Dragapult, and if you're against like some any other, and I guess Blissey, it's probably really good against Blissey. If you're against anything else, like, what are you doing? Yeah, you know, what's the point?
I've kind of like not loved decks that are this one dimensional where it's like, okay, you're really good at knocking out two prizers, but like, God forbid you're up against a single prize deck. You know, then you're just like having the worst time of your life. I don't think that I generally tend to like love those kinds of decks. I mean, I guess Mew VMAX, but Mew VMAX felt like it had more counterplay against single prize decks.
Mew VMAX was so disruptive. Yeah.
Yes, yes. The hand disruption was everything, right? Being able to judge and Iono, and it's like the Raging Bolt deck doesn't have that. You got to play cards like Sada, man. Like, you're not going to be able to disrupt like that. You got to play Sada every turn. And it's kind of my beef with the ancient decks. It's always been my beef with the ancient decks, is you're just playing Sada way too much, which is kind of an underwhelming supporter card to play as your supporter for turn when there are so many other powerful options in the format. I think if we compare a deck like Raging Bolt to another big base deck like Maridon, right? Maridon just kind of has more tools in its you know, tool chest. It's got the ability to go turn one Iron Hands. And that is something that is kind of nuts against single prize decks and Dragapult.
Yeah, I mean, Rhydon is definitely much more flexible of a deck. Also, like, underrated, like, element is the Rescue Board plus the Tatsugiri combo is really great in Rhydon. Actually, like, I always felt like when I was playing Rhydon, like, I would just get stuck, you know, you'd research and you'd get no other supporter in that hand. And you're like, dang, if only I had another supporter, I could play the game. And now there's a card that does that. It's awesome. So, yeah, I think Rhydon's just, honestly, some of its flaws have been patched up. One of its biggest poor matchups going down. Dragapult stocks are up. Rhydon is, so far in Japanese results, doing really well into the matchup. Rhydon seems like it's such a good spot right now, which I'm in favor of. Raging Bolt, I can see why it's popular. People always like these attacks. People always gravitate towards the discard energy and do X times the number of energy you discard. They love that.
Reshiram and Zekrom Tank Team GX. That card was bad.
And it's fun and silly to like play three different colors of energy to achieve that goal. And it's fun and silly to like, you know, Radiant Greninja, and then Ogerpon, and then Ogerpon, and then Sadas, and like do all that stuff. Like, I get it. I totally get it. It's why it's a fun and exciting deck for
there's synergy people to play. There is. Yeah.
It's not for me. Not at all.
So. Yeah, I'm not feeling like I have enough control over the game playing a deck like that. It's kind of the, you know, you're not asking yourself like, all right, who am I attacking with this turn? It's Raging Bolt. And what am I attacking? What's in the active?
Yeah.
And how do I get there? We're playing Sada.
Yeah, that's so true.
Like, that sucks, you know, if you ask me. Like, that game plan sucks. You know, there's not any sort of, like, counterplay or higher, you know, kind of plan going on. It's just, this is all we're doing. So, that's my beef. But a deck like Mirrodin does have slightly more going on. And I think the Iron Hand situation, actually activating a card like Arvin with the Rescue Board, I think it's a really good point. You know, Arvin just gets so much better in these Mirrodin decks. Arvin was already being played in Mirrodin decks previously, but those decks had to play, like, Beach Court to pivot in and out of the active spot and kind of just hope that they had them at the right time. But now you can force the situation with Arvin for Rescue Board Generator, and then you've got your switch, right? The tool being the switch. That was, like, one of the key things. Now you don't need to worry about that. Your Arvin can now get you the generator and the switch all in one. That is a huge deal from Ryan.
I told you all that Rescue Board was good, and you put me down, and you made me feel bad about myself, and I was right.
I was wrong. I was wrong, rather.
Look, it's no Floatstone, but it doesn't need to be.
It'll never be Floatstone. It'll never even be a skateboard to me. It'll never even be U-turn board to me. It's so much worse than all those. It's not even air balloon, dog. This card sucks.
But it's fine. It's still
enough.
It's
just the best we have.
It's enough. Look, you were hardly playing U-turn board because it returned to your hand. Like, that did not come up that often in, like, practical games. You're playing the U-turn board.
It comes up in GLC all the time.
That's true. But, like, U-turn board was played while it was out in, like, single prize decks and stuff because it gave you minus one retreat. Like, sometimes that's all you need.
It is. As proven by Rescue Board, I'll give you that one, Riley. I thought, in the bonus effect, I bet you most people don't even know what the bonus effect on Rescue Board does. You're
going to
forget about that almost instantly.
That's so true. But minus one retreat is powerful. It really is. I honestly, like, whenever I'm, like, playing with Chen Pao, I'm like, dang, I wish, like, tools were still items, because then I could, like, throw a Rescue Board one off in this deck, and I wouldn't have to retreat the dang Greninja every time I wanted to attack.
Retreating the Greninja is part of the Chen Pao lifestyle, though. You just, yeah, you just, all of your like, equations in your head account for retreating the Greninja.
They do, but, like, imagine how much easier hitting that six energy would be. The six energy would be ridiculously easier if you didn't have to pay that retreat.
I've thought it, for sure. Well, that's when you got to have a Chen Pao on the bench already. You don't always have that luxury, but it's fine. You play three rods. That's why you throw the energy back.
Sure,
rod. You're fine.
Sure.
You're fine.
Well, I think my final question for today, NAIC, if it were tomorrow, what deck are you sleeving up and rolling up with?
Oh, I don't have to sleeve it up because it's already sleeved, and it's Baxcalibur, baby. 100%. We are running it back Baxcalibur Chen Pao. I have made three changes to my list. Three. I took out two 60-hit-point Frigibacks because I was playing all three 60-hit-point Frigibacks, and I inserted two of the Collect Frigibacks, which draw a card. Oh, look at my balloons.
What the heck?
Yes. Two 70-hit-point Frigibacks, and I took out a 60-hit-point Bidoof, and I put in one of those stupid 70-hit-point Bidoofs from Brilliant Stars. That's
it. Perfect
deck otherwise.
Do you even need that? Do you even need the Bidoof?
Why not play a 1-1 split, you know? Why not? Yes. Yeah, I mean, dude, Dragapult knocking your guys out is stupid, man. I'm not trying to get hosed by a Dragapult just, like, taking two prizes for no reason. You know, knocking out my active Greninja and my bench Bidoof for no reason. Yeah, not today.
That's fair. Yeah, I feel like you only need one of each of the basics at 70, and you're probably chilling. Because also, like, a non-zero amount of the time, they miss the attack turn two. And a non-zero amount of the time, you go first anyway, and it doesn't matter. So, like...
You're right. Maybe I end up going to one 70-hit-point Frigi. Maybe. You're right, though. That's why it's a miracle. I've said it's a miracle if they attack turn two anyway. So,
right by the time they're attacking, you're like four prizes deep. Like,
yeah,
chilling.
And their highest probability of attacking turn two is if they go second. And if they go second, you're attacking turn two. You're going to be the first person attacking because exactly. You're going first.
Yeah.
So you really, yes. So I played a best of three against Jesse playing Dragapult and me playing Baxcalibur. I 2-0'd him. That was all the information I needed to see. I am playing Baxcalibur for NAIC.
Yeah. All right. It's so funny. You were so anti-Baxcalibur at UIC, and now you're just totally pilled. It's awesome.
I have come around. Yes, it is the most broken deck.
It is pretty broken. Until people roll up with Snorlax to NAIC, and you're feeling really sad.
Oh, yeah. No, you just dodge those. That's the Chen Pao. I've realized it's part of the lifestyle. You just dodge those. Also, part of the lifestyle is not to question the play. You just got to be just like Jishen. You think Jishen wonders what he's going to play, bro? No. You think Reagan wonders what he's going to play, bro? No. Okay. No, they're not wondering what they're going to play. They're wondering how they're going to play it. And that's how a true Baxcalibur head thinks.
Are they even wondering how they're going to play it? I feel like they know how they're
like, how many 70 hit point guys to play? Yes, that's the question.
Oh, sure.
Yes, how many of these 70 hit point idiots do I put in? Do I need to play a silly card like Vacuum or something, you know, if any of these tools are problematic? I don't think so, but like that's a question that might cross my mind. I don't think I will, but you know, it's something to think about. So anyways, yeah. That's my answer. What's your answer, Riley?
I think that is a good answer, honestly. Baxcalibur is definitely the deck I've played the most in this current format. So I think I'm there with you, to be honest. Like, I think the matchups stay good for Baxcalibur, and it's doesn't really like lose anything positive that's already going for it. So I think my other answer though would be Maridon, and I've alluded to that several times on the cast. I think Maridon's like really good in this coming format. It's aggressive, which is awesome, and really preys on decks like Dragapult, which are a little more passive in the early game. And it's a big basic deck, just like try and true strategy in of itself. And it's got the fish and the board now, which is everything I wanted. The two things I really wanted from Maridon back when we were really high on it is a free retreat like tool and a way to get supporters out of the deck. And like you got those things now, so I think that's sick. So
the Tatsugiri does seem nuts for Maridon. I'm just kind of thinking Tatsugiri with Mew EX, dude, like
that's a
draw engine. Well, that's a whole draw engine.
Literally. It's like It's so insane. And I think it's really, really good. And I've always thought that was like the piece that Maridon was missing to like really feel like a tier one deck to me consistently. It was like, how many times do you research and you're just like, I'm going to be playing with this hand for the next four turns? Because you know? I know like, there's a lightning energy on my top deck for the next three.
Going to have to make the most of this.
Sure. You know, like, that happens so often. And if you had Tatsugiri, that opinion would totally change. So.
Right. That's true. As someone who really likes Chen Pao, I'm definitely a little bit worried about Maridon because Maridon's just one of those decks that can go turn one hands and can outhands you. I don't like that. Okay, I'm not trying to get outhands.
You're supposed to be the hands deck.
I know. The Chen Pao party starts on turn two, which is pretty fast for a lot of, you know, for a lot of decks out there. But the Maridon party starts on turn one, and that's...
Yeah, even then, I feel like Chen Pao is not hitting turn two hands that often.
No, that's, you got to be drawing real hot to hit the turn two hands for sure.
It's not impossible, but you really...
No, I did it to Jesse on stream. Yeah, I did it to Jesse on stream. It was sick.
Awesome. Well, I think that covers all the things that I wanted to hit on. Any other words of wisdom you want to pass to our lovely viewers and listeners?
No, just thank you so much for listening to the cast. I had a lot of people come up to me at Indy and say how much they liked listening to the cast, which is always sick. It's not usually what I'm expecting because I'm like, you know, usually it's the YouTube stuff. I had a lot of people saying, yo, I listened to the cast. I really appreciate what you guys are doing. So I just want you to know that really means a lot to me, as I'm sure it means a lot to all of us here at Tag Team. So thank you guys all so much for listening and for being a part of the community here.
Yeah, absolutely. JW and I always used to talk about how much we really love the Tag Team community. You all are so so nice and so gracious as well at these events, very respectful, and I really appreciate the awesome group of folks who listen to us. Make sure to check out Manscaped as well if you appreciate us. But that'll be it for today. Oh, I'm really digging these like little bubbles, Discord bro. Gesture effects.
Yeah, I don't really know how those are popping up. I'll have to investigate.
I feel like they mostly affect you as well, which is interesting.
Yes, because I think it's something to do with like the Mac OS or something.
Maybe.
But you can turn them off, but I haven't.
I mean, I think they're fun. Well, anyway.
They are fun.
If you enjoy listening to the cast, make sure to check us out on social media as well. You can find me at Smiles with Riles, Andrew at EnjoyFriend, JW at RealJohnWalter, and the cast itself at Tag Team Pokemon. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will catch you next week. Peace.
See ya.